Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup. And a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 289. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's good. We've gotten winter back here. It's going to be 30 degrees tonight. We have a freeze warning, which is bizarre. And then I'm going to fly out early tomorrow morning. I'll be in Florida probably by the time you listen to this. And we go in from 30 degrees to 87 degrees. So it's going to be very drastic. But I am ready to be back in Florida. It'll be a lot of fun being your Sox territory in Fort Myers. So a couple days there to be a good time. Looking forward to it.
So wait, is it warmer in Maine right now than it is in South Carolina?
I don't know about at the moment. Like right now it says it's 50 here, but it's going to be, we have a freeze warning. It's going to be 30 tonight.
So right now it is 41 and we're getting down to, at least according to my phone, the lowest I see is 32. So your low might be lower than ours tonight.
Wow. That's
just weird.
It is weird. Very strange.
But yeah. But just remember, you got that 80-degree weather awaiting you in less than 12 hours, or about 12 hours or so. But we're almost there, almost ready, almost to spring training. I think we need the season to just start, because as we were talking before we started recording, I was not affected a lot by injuries and whatnot until Noel V's suspension. That was like the first domino for me. Then after that, it's like the floodgates have opened. So we got Garrett Cole, Yoan Duran. It's just a need a season to start. And we're almost there. We get the start of the season, when you listen to this, technically tomorrow, the CL series, which I still think is weird how they play a couple regular season games, then go back and do more spring training, and then back to the regular season. Like,
strange.
I'm absolutely all for the CL series, for sure. And then any other series they want to do like this and in whatever country. But just make it like a spring training thing and have something maybe for charity. I don't know. But this is weird to have regular season go back to spring training and back to regular season. But anyway, we're going to be talking some dynasty kind of risers and fallers this week from spring training. Obviously, we've said that rankings don't change a ton. There is some movement going on in rankings right now, guys having hot springs, cold springs, getting injured, you know, making changes, whatever it may be. We're talking just risers today. We'll talk fallers in tomorrow's episode. We'll still get you three episodes this week. Just couldn't record on Sunday night. But a lot of fun names to talk about today. But before we do, the usual housekeeping. You can follow us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm Eric Cross 04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. And make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com, for more work from each of us. A lot of great stuff on both of those, including all of our prospect and dynasty rankings. And make sure you check out all the great stuff going on over at Rotoballer. The draft kit is loaded. A lot of great content, great tools to help you win and succeed this fantasy season. Use that code TOOLSHED to get you 10% off any premium package over at rotoballer.com. It's going to have a bit of a Pittsburgh feel to the beginning of the show, because we're talking four straight Pittsburgh Pirates to open the episode today. You get Henry Davis, Keep Ryan Hayes, O'Neill Cruz, and Jack Suwinski, who have all been red hot this spring, especially O'Neal Cruz. So let's start there. After he hit two home runs today, had three batted balls above, I think it was above 108. And he already has, I saw the stat today, Chris. He has four home runs this spring with a 110 EV or better. That was more than, it was more than one team last year and then tied with another team. I forget the teams right now. I feel like the Nats might have been one of them, but I can't remember. But
and that was for the regular season, right?
Yes, yeah, the entire, yeah, not just spring. The entire regular season, 162 games. One team had three, another team had four, and he's had four this spring, which is just absolutely bonkers. And he's now leading the entire spring training with seven home runs in just 11 games, no less. 14 RBI, five walks, eight strikeouts, a pretty solid rate there. Has a steal as well. And obviously the upside here is massive. We've seen that. And in the one season where we had at least somewhat of a sample size back in 2022, had 17 home runs, 10 steals, and 361 plate appearances. Only hit .233 with a .294 OBP, but 15.5% barrel rate, 92-mile-an-hour average exit velocity, and a 46% hard hit rate. And obviously, there's still some questions with the strikeouts and the contact overall, Chris, but where do you think O'Neal Cruz settles in at? Let's say best-case scenario that he makes some adjustments and then maybe a more realistic scenario.
If all pans out, I think we're looking at O'Neal Cruz being a 40 home run, 20 stolen base type. He's a really good athlete. The speed is there for him. You know, he can run. Last year, the sprint speed was 83rd percentile, and he's shown a knack for stealing bases in the past. So in 2022, his sprint speed was actually 98th percentile, which, you know, I don't put a ton of stock in. It's still pretty encouraging to look at and to see that kind of those numbers. They're wild. Cruz, from a contact standpoint, is still a big question mark. So that's, I think, that what he needs to answer is, like, how much contact is he going to make? And I'm honestly not so sure. And the good news is that even if he settles in as a 250 type hitter, it's still going to play. He is going to be a really solid asset, even as a 250 hitter. He's going to get on base at a pretty high clip, in my opinion. So that's certainly good news that, you know, you're going to get a decent OBP if you're in OBP league, and the power and speed are really good. But I will say the contact so far this spring is a bit concerning. It so far is 65% contact, but the EVs are through the roof, as you mentioned. Looking at a 98 mile an hour average EV so far this spring.
That's pretty good.
98 average, which is just absurd. And his ninth percentile is like 115, which is elite of elite. So yeah, it's no surprise there. I think that Cruz has the potential to return first round value. It's not crazy to think that this year he could return first round value, because you look and okay, like, this guy, really good EVs, really good speed. And that's what you're looking for with a player. And last year he had cut the contact rate early before the injury. So yeah, I'm curious to see if that sticks. And if it does, then you can live with him being a 250 or 260 hitter, given the kind of numbers that he can put up.
Yeah, that's all we're looking for, right? 250 could unlock that 40-20. And yeah, the OBP probably be on the lower side as well. But if you're getting 40-20 and probably solid runs in RBI to go with that, he realistically could be the number three shortstop. Like, we did that, our Dynasty Crystal Ball, and we both had him top five. He could push into the three spot or even the two spot, depending on how Ellie develops. Yeah, definitely lots of upside here. And I'm buying on that upside. Right now, it's probably a hard time to buy because, obviously, the hype on him is just so massive right now. But if you can get him for somewhat realistic price tag, I would still try to buy high right now because, again, this could be a top 25 Dynasty player. I don't think the price tag is top 25 right now. It's probably more like top 40 to 50 range, but definitely would try to go out and get him because that top 25 price tag is probably coming pretty damn soon. And obviously he has the most upside on this Pittsburgh team by a significant margin, but these are the three: Henry Davis, Jack Sawinski, and Cabrera Hayes all have intriguing upside in their own right. Let's keep it on that left side of the infield with Cabrera Hayes, who's hitting 421, 436, 7-11 this spring when he won walk, one strikeout. So putting the ball in play, a couple of doubles, three home runs, still hitting the ball into the ground too much. So I guess that's the question we've asked ourselves in the past, Chris. Do you think that Hayes, obviously he's hitting the ball hard now. He hit the ball hard last year. That's been consistent with him. But can he finally put it together where maybe he's 20-plus home runs? Because honestly, he could be a 30-homer bat if he drives the ball in the air enough. Will that happen? I don't know. Do you think it will happen, though?
It's a good question. I wish I had a good answer to it. I am beginning to believe that guys just can't fix launch angle problems.
It's hard, yeah.
It's really hard. You have to make drastic swing changes to be able to do that. Now, Hayes had a really good second half last year. So I think that you look at that and you're like, all right, so at least there's that's going for him. But then you look and the ground balls are still an issue. Like you see every day he's hitting the ball hard, but it's 107, negative 10 degree launch angle. Of course. Like,
yep.
Why wouldn't it be? He has gotten into more homers, which is really good. You like to see those things. And at the end of the day, like the launch angle still, it looks pretty good for Hayes at the moment at 11 degrees. But again, we're talking a 37 batted ball sample. And honestly, like launch angle's tough with him because last year he had a 13 degree launch angle. It's because he's hitting some pop flies and then he's pounding into the ground. So that's the really hard thing with Hayes is, okay, you're not really getting the results because while the launch angle can look okay, it's just mixed bag of results. It's either fly ball or ground ball. I do think Hayes is capable of breaking out, though. I think like when you look at ground ball problems, you're like, all right, Vlad Guerrero Jr., he's already very highly priced. Ke'Bryan Hayes is relatively cheap in comparison. So when you look at it that way, you're like, all right, I think that Hayes may be worth a buy and the chance that he does break out and move upwards, which is a real possibility because it doesn't take too much, in my opinion, for him to really move up. So I'd watch out and see what he does. But at the end of the day, like I'm not going to sit here and say I'm super confident that Ke'Bryan Hayes is going to have a massive breakout year. Do I think it can be improved? Yes, I do.
Yeah, I bet you if you looked at percent of batted balls that are either above, let's say like above 45 degrees or below 0 degrees, I bet you he's probably right up there if you combine those two marks. And then you get into that better range, he's probably one of the lower. That's why you see a lower barrel rate with him. I mean, not a bad barrel rate. He actually was right around league average or tick above league average barrel rate. But when you look at comparing like his hard hit rate and average exit velocity to the barrel rate, that's where it doesn't line up. And I really hope, because I have a lot of Ke'Bryan Hayes shares. Like I've been going after this year, more so in redrafts, Hayes, Marte, and Berger a lot. So I really hope that Hayes can, because yeah, the upside, he's stolen double-digit steals each of the last 2 years and would have in 2021 as well, but he only played 396 plate appearances. The upside's there for a 25 to 30 homer, 15 steal guy that hits you 260, 270. Like that upside is there, and will he ever do it though? But I'm definitely, given like how fair the price is right now, I think there's a better chance that he gives you a positive ROI than a neutral or negative ROI. So I'd go out there and try to get him for sure. Moving to the outfield now, Jack Sawinski, I think it went under the radar, like how decent of a season he had last year. Yeah, he only hit 224, much better OBP asset than average, that's for sure. But he had a 26 homer, 13 steal season last year. K rate's always been high, but so has the walk rate. Barrel rate was 15.7% last year. That's elite. 43.4% hard hit rate. A lot of good in the profile, just unfortunately. The whiff rate is high. The K rate is high. Zone contacts are, below average, but not terrible. And he doesn't even chase a lot. Chase rate's only 18.2%. It's just putting the ball in play has been the issue here with Sawinski, but he's having a pretty good spring as well, as mentioned earlier. In, let's see here, 13 games, he is 316, 350, 711. Three doubles, four home runs, one steal. Does have 10 strikeouts to just two walks. Do you think we could see a step forward from Sawinski this year, Chris? I think we could.
I think beyond step forward, is I guess people fully realizing how good he is. Man, we're talking about somebody that went 26-13 last year with home runs and stolen bases. Obviously, the counting stats are a little lower because that lineup, which hopefully is a little better this year. Sawinski is just 25 years old, and that's important to remember. He's running like elite barrel rates. He doesn't chase, like you mentioned. He takes his walks. Like, he's going to play exceptionally better in an OBP league than a batting average league. But honestly, like, the contact rates aren't as bad as the strikeout rate make it seem. They're not great, but the strikeout rate's like fifth percentile at 32.2%. But the contact actually has looked better. We'll see if that sticks in the regular season. I'm not putting a lot of stock into the spring contact improvement kind of thing because the competition is just so-so. But I do look at it and say, okay, Sawinski does a lot of things well, and I do think he's still undervalued, especially in an OBP context where I think he probably plays as a top 150 player. I'd be actually curious to look and see where he finished on the Rasball Player Rater last year for OBP leagues. But yeah, I think that this is where his true value is. He may never be a good batting average asset, but he can be really good OBP. And yeah, on the Rasball Player Rater last year for hitters, he was the 69th best hitter. So there's some good value there in an OBP format. Probably looking at like close to a top 100, top 110 type of player when you factor in pitchers as well. So I think that maybe Sawinski doesn't break out, but I think Sawinski becomes much more on radars and probably does similar and maybe a tad bit better than he did last year.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that you take last year and just add a little bit across the board. I think he's more like 240, 250 in that range. I think the OBP kicks up to 350, 360. I think 30-15 is in play here. Obviously, he was only 4-2 short of that last year. And given his, you know, quality of contact, solid sprint speed as well, 81st percentile, 30-15 is absolutely in play. And maybe he even gets up over like 80 runs in RBI. So a lot of what we were saying, this reminds me of what we were saying about like James a few weeks ago, Chris. I think there could be very similar seasons here. And I think Sawinski is, you know, very underrated. I guess it's, you know, again, Pittsburgh thing outside of O'Neill Cruz. Everyone feels underrated on this team. And I'm definitely looking to buy Sawinski right now in Dynasty Leagues for sure. Last Pittsburgh hitter we're discussing here is Henry Davis, who has cooled a little bit since his red hot spring, but still very good numbers overall. Had a couple of hits today, .306, .381, .694, two doubles, four home runs, five walks, 10 steals. Bat speed noticeably better this year. Do you think that full-on breakout is coming, Chris? Like, I mean, we're assuming he's going to get catcher eligibility back this year. And what are we looking at from Henry Davis? Like, you know, end of the year or next offseason, Henry Davis is a top blank catcher for Dynasty.
I think probably top eight. So it does mean that he's a really good buy. And I think it helps the fact that he can play outfield too.
Yep.
I think they signed Grandal for a reason. So ultimately, I do think that Davis is not going to catch every day. And I think that's pretty clear. But when he's not catching, he can play in the outfield, which is really nice. That allows him to get more plate appearances. It allows him to accumulate, which is huge. And you look, and Davis went to Driveline. I know you can laugh. Everybody's going to Driveline these days, but he actually did increase his bat speed. Like, that was like a real thing. And it's looking like it's paying off. He's hitting the ball very hard all spring. I know it's a small sample, but it's been very encouraging to see what Davis has done. I think that he's a great OBP asset. Maybe he's not the best in batting average leagues, but there's going to be legit power there. And I do think the fact that he's playing multiple spots is really big for his value.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're getting a guy that could realistically go like 2010 this year, yeah, that's definitely, I think that puts him right in tier two. And I don't think he'll get up in that top tier with Adley and Contreras, etc. But could he get into the same range as where I think Moreno will be? Is Logan O'Hoppe, guys like that? Sure. I think he definitely could get up in that range. And yeah, I think he's an absolutely phenomenal buy right now in all leagues, especially Dynasty Leagues, that value. Yeah, the price tag's probably gone up, obviously, since the start of spring training, but probably will continue going up. So a good opportunity to buy right now, and we'll see that price tag continue to rise here. One more Pittsburgh Pirate on the list. This one over on the pitching side here. Jared Jones has had a phenomenal spring and looks to be maybe getting into that fifth spot in the rotation, though they have signed a couple of guys, Eric Lauer and who they just signed, Domingo Herman. We'll see. I'm hoping that's just more so for depth than anything else, because Jared Jones, again, has looked very good this spring. Now he's popping the radar gun, triple digits. The wow factor is there. But what do you think Jones is long-term, Chris? You think this is a guy that could potentially be like a top 50 arm for fantasy down the road?
I do. I really believe in the changes and the strides that he's made over the last several years, because to me, he was a surefire reliever in 2022. When I saw him several outings, and it was like, man, the stuff's electric. But then by the third, it was like, it was just gone. The command was gone. The stuff ticked down, the velocity left. And I was convinced that at that point, he was going to be a reliever, a good one. He was definitely going to be a high leverage guy. But then this year, he comes out and it's okay. This guy actually has the stuff. It's sticking 5-6 innings. The velocity's holding. Like, all those things that you want to see were happening. And then this spring, he took another step forward. And the stuff looks even better, especially the fastball. Like, the fastball is really the biggest thing with him. And it's looking really good. Increased IVB, increased velocity, the location up in the zone. Like, all those things are huge. And at the end of the day, I think Jones has mid-rotation upside, and he may hit it pretty soon. So I think that's certainly a top 50 type that I certainly want to invest in. I think the cost is rising significantly with him, but it probably only goes up even more. And I don't know. I'm very interested, and I think that he's one that I would take a shot on if I could.
Yeah, I was definitely way too low on him, and he's now definitely inside my top 100 prospects overall, top 10 pitching prospect. With him, Chris, do you think there's enough swing and miss there? Obviously, the slider has been a really big swing and miss offering for him. Some call it a cutter, whatever. It's whatever you want to call it. That's been a big swing and miss offering for him. But do you think he can have that third pitch? He's been very four-seam slider heavy this spring. Do you think that third pitch can come from whether it's the curve or the change?
I think that's a good question. I think that will be the sticking point for him. If he can do that, then it certainly allows him to play up even more. At the moment, like, looking at what he brings, I think that it is fastball heavy slider. He threw the curve enough last year, just not enough for strikes, and didn't miss enough bats. It was a fine bat missing pitch. The slider was obviously much better, but I do think that Jones has the potential to do that. I think he knows he's going to have to be more than a two pitch guy, because it's not Strider. Like, Strider can get away with two pitches, but not everybody can. So, like, last year it was, you know, sub 10% on the changeup and the curve. But the changeup has that potential to be a really good pitch, in my opinion. It has really good fade to it. It's got actually pretty good ride. I think it plays well off the fastball. And the curve has really good downward action, high spinning pitch. But then you look at the fastball, and the fastball slider were both really good, and the fastball is taking that step. So I don't know. I think that's a good question that we have to consider, and I hope that one of those pitches will evolve to at least be average or better. And if so, I think the potential is there.
All right, moving over to the Oakland Athletics, and maybe one of the only teams less exciting than the Pittsburgh Pirates. But J.D. Bleda is having a pretty solid spring, and as is Zach Galoff. We already talked about Galoff last week, so we won't do that so again today. But Bleda right now is hitting 351, 429, 541 home run and a steal so far in 15 games. He has a couple doubles and a triple as well, four walks to four strikeouts. And this is a guy that was obviously, Chris, former, you know, not like elite prospect status. He was like a top 100 guy, maybe even top 50 on some list, number four overall pick. So back in 2019, so has the top, you know, draft pick pedigree with him, but has really struggled each of his first two seasons. So far, in a combined 541 plate appearances across the last two seasons, under 200 both years, 183 overall with a 296 OBP, 335 slug, 15 home runs and 9 steals. Pretty solid walk rate both years, 12-13%. Cut the K rate last year under 24%. Quality of contact has been underwhelming for him. Not terrible, but underwhelming. Same with the contact rates. Again, not terrible, but below average for sure. Do you think there's some fantasy value to be had here, Chris? Because obviously not a lot in his way, so probably get some playing time this year in that Oakland outfield. Do you see him maybe recouping some of that value he's lost over the last couple of years?
I think he might can, actually. I think that's not something I would have said coming into the spring, but he actually looks like the player, not quite the player, but semi-like the player that many thought he could be. I know he was drafted quite high at 4th overall by the Marlins. That's an absurdly high price to pay for somebody for the kind of performance that he's produced so far. But the contact's improved, the strikeout rate improved. But I will say, I'll put the caveat on it, that his strikeout rate in AAA last year was 13.5%. So it was his 133 plate appearances. We're talking 42 plate appearances this spring. I do think that there is potential, but I wonder if facing better competition, which you can actually look at the competition that he's faced on Baseball Reference, which I think is a pretty neat feature. And his opponent quality has been 7.1, which is like AA equivalent. So not great there. But I will say, he's still young. He's just 26 years old. He's got power. There is the potential for him to take that step. And I hope that he will. I hope we'll see him take that step forward this year. I think he's got a spot. I'm fairly certain he's got a spot in that Oakland outfield. And he'll get every chance to prove that he is legit and what he's done this spring is real. So we shall see.
Yeah, I definitely think he's better than what he showed the last 2 years. But yeah, I'm in the mindset that he's maybe a low-end value guy. I can see him getting up to like 230 to 240, 15 to 20 home runs, 5 to 10 steals, which is still, you know, has its value there. But I don't think he's ever going to live up to the expectations that were on him early on after he was drafted back by the Marlins. So I guess he's a buy because the value is like dirt cheap or free, depending on your league depth right now. But I'm expecting a step forward, but it's just not a massive one. But let's round out the hitters with three young rising stars right now. One of which is in the opening day lineup for his team. The other, second one, probably the third one, maybe probably a long shot, not a long shot, but we got Jackson Merrill, who's in the opening day lineup for the Padres. Cezanne Rafaela, he should be in the opening day lineup for the Red Sox. And then Chase DeLauder, all of which have been very hot this spring. Rafaela, 273, 333, 568. It does have 12 strikeouts to 4 walks, but 3 home runs, 2 steals, 4 doubles, like showing off that extra base pop, the speed. He's been a very exciting player. Has played a little bit of second base, too, here and there, which is exciting to see. Chase DeLauder hit his 3rd home run today on Monday. 10 for 21 with 3 home runs, 4 walks to 3 strikeouts, and a double as well. And just really showcasing that he's, like I was saying, like he is a top 10 fantasy prospect for me right now. And I think the consensus is getting pretty close to that. And then Jackson Merrill, 351, 400, 595. 3 doubles, 2 home runs, 2 steals, 3 walks to 3 strikeouts. Go wherever you want with this, Chris. All 3 have been very impressive. All 3 are going to be there opening day or shortly thereafter. The upside's high on all 3 of these guys. Floor is yours.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I think that looking at it, I would say Chase DeLauder probably has the most upside. But I also think that he's least likely to make the opening day roster. The talent's there. I am very excited about DeLauder long-term. I think, unfortunately, despite how good the spring is, that the Guardians are just going to be Cleveland. They're going to keep him down at least a month. They're going to give Miles Straw a chance before they DFA him or they send Davison de los Santos back to Arizona. I just don't think DeLauder breaks camp, unfortunately. But that doesn't mean I don't like him the most long-term. It's the most upside. Now, Jackson Merrill is very fun. He made the team as a 20-year-old. He's over in Korea with them. And I think he's going to perform really well because the contact skills are so good. He made a conscious effort to lift the ball more last year. You know what? That was a change. We were talking about earlier in the show about launch angle changes. He was 19 and 20, and he made an effective change. The ground ball rate dropped about 10 percentage points. So that is really notable in my book because he hits the ball hard too. Merrill has the power. He's got the contact, some of the best contact in the minors with really good power. He's a good athlete. So Merrill is somebody to bet on in 2024. It's probably a Sadon Rafaela who also looks the part and looks like he could be one that really may break out. I think that he's ready to take that step forward in the majors. He's hitting the ball much harder. He's lifting it. I think the chase rate's actually been cut. And I don't want to put too much stock into that because it's a small sample, but we're looking at the last 2 years, 2022 and 2023, Rafaela was chasing at a 40% clip. He's around 30% this spring. I would like to, I don't have last year's spring training numbers to compare, but it would be interesting to actually look at and see, okay, is this comparable? Was he lower last spring or not? But Rafaela has hit over 20 homers the last 2 years. He's got really good speed, and he's somebody that I really want to watch closely, as I really think that he could, you know, break out too. So all these names are interesting. I would say that Rafaela maybe gives you the best season this year, but long term, it's probably DeLauder.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I do think Rafaela is in the opening day lineup. His defensive versatility, coupled with the fact that Willy Abreu has not had a good spring. He's walked a lot, but he's also struck out a lot, not hitting for much average. So I think Abreu is more the fourth outfielder there. And then Rafaela can move around, play a little second if they want to use him in there until Grissom gets back, or at short and moves short at second, whatever it may be. Yeah, like everything clicks with Rafaela. It's 20 home runs and 30 plus steals. Like saying that for a while, and I was wowed by him in Double A. Saw him a lot in Double A over the last couple of years. And just, he's really fun to watch. He's a great athlete. He's like a Mookie Betts light, and I'm not comping on the Mookie Betts, but obviously everything's scaled back way back from Mookie Betts. But just the fact that he's a good athlete, got that pop from the smaller frame, good speed, good athlete, defensive versatility is there too, as we've seen with Mookie. So I think he's going to be someone that Red Sox fans are just going to fall in love with, and fantasy friendly profile. Love Rafael a lot. He's a great buy right now in dynasty leagues and a great value in redraft as well. Do it now before the price tag keeps going up, because if they name him the opening day, whatever, center fielder, second baseman, right fielder, whatever, that price tag's probably jump 50 plus picks. And yet, Jackson Merrill, I was one that was probably a little bit lower on him over the last couple of years, but I just put him in my top 20. I have him actually at 20 overall running the dots, because like you mentioned, Chris, like he doesn't wow you with the power speed, but it's good. Like he's above average power guy, solid speed, could be like a 20, 25 homer, 15 to 20 steal guy, with a good average and a solid OBP as well. And the guy that lineup is pretty good. He's probably going to hit, seventh or so in that lineup, but a guy that could be a well-rounded five-category guy. And we'll see, maybe, I don't know if he's an outfielder. Obviously, he will be the start. Is that where he is long-term? Does he move back to the infield eventually? Maybe gets dual eligibility. We'll see. That's definitely like Merrill a lot. And then Chase DeLauder, obviously, I've been very high on him for a while. I think it's 30-plus home runs. I think there's a chance for 15 to 20 steals, as well with a solid average and OBP as well. I mean, he's always shown a pretty good approach. Contact skills are there. And everybody, please stop talking about his swing. I literally can't post about DeLauder without somebody commenting on the swing. It's fine. Again, as I wrote in an article, I think it was for a Roto Baller, that once a hitter makes contact and drives through the ball, they can do the hokey pokey and turn themselves around for all I care. Like, it does not matter. Yet it looks a little unconventional. I don't care. The metrics are there. The skills are there. Performance is there. I think he's going to be a stud as soon as he steps on the field. So we'll see when that is. I'm hoping he breaks camp. Wasn't sent down with Manzardo. Maybe, but we shall see. But all three are phenomenal dynasty buys right now. All right, let's go over to the pitchers here. We already talked about Jared Jones just because we wanted to loop him in with all the other Pittsburgh guys. But we still got, seven more pitchers here. Good mix, too, of some younger guys and some veterans. Let's start in Boston with Garrett Whitlock, who will be in the opening day rotation here, especially after the injury to Lucas Giolito, who will have to wait till 2025 to see him pitch in a regular season game for the Red Sox. But Whitlock has been pretty good this spring and better than Houck overall. And I've had my questions about what is Whitlock. I mean, he was good in the bullpen for us, but in the rotation, showed some glimpses. But this spring, he's been really impressive so far. 5 outings, 3.45 ERA over 15 and two-thirds, 2 walks to 16 strikeouts, whip just under 1, 2.13 batting average against. How high do you think Whitlock can rise, Chris? And do you think he can stick as a starter? I'm starting to be more of a believer. Still a little skeptical if he's a starter long term, if he can hold up to a starter's workload, but definitely has the talent to be a pretty, not a high end, but a decent fantasy arm.
Yeah, I'm very, very interested in Whitlock this year. I want to get him on pretty much every team possible. I think that his spring has looked really good. He's looked confident, which I think is a big thing, is just him having that confidence, and it's working. The results are coming. You know, he's had a really solid 5 starts, 15 and two-thirds innings so far, a whip below 1, a 3.45 ERA. And I know you don't want to talk about spring stats a lot, but watching Whitlock, he looks really good. And so from that standpoint, I think he's ready to be a starter and to be a solid one at that. I think we saw the flashes of that in 2022, and then we had the high expectations in 2023. But now I believe that we're close. We are very close to seeing Whitlock look like a really solid bet. And I'm excited to see what he can do this year in the rotation full time. I think it's going to be really good.
Yeah, and I think I said that he's not as good, was better than Houck so far. Actually, Houck's been really good too. I think I goofed up my words there, but who would you rather invest in, Chris, right now? I mean, Houck's looking good too. 15 innings, 0.87 whip, 2.40 ERA, 16 Ks to 3 walks. If you had to pick one right now to invest in between Houck and Whitty, who would it be?
I'm a little more confident in Whitlock, so I think Houck's more of a reliever. We've seen him look really good in these 3-inning stints in the past.
Yeah.
And I've been confident, but I think that at this point, I'm much more confident in Whitlock being a really good starter.
Yeah, I think I'm there with you. I think Houck has higher upside, but I think the lower floor as well. So I will lean towards Whitlock as well. Next name here, let's go down to your Atlanta Braves here with Reynaldo Lopez, the number 5 starter for the Braves entering the season. You know, we saw him a couple weeks ago when we were down in Florida, looked really good. You know, Elder has already been optioned the AAA here. Lopez, another guy, Whitlock, who's been in multiple roles throughout his career, has shown some flashes of some upside, but inconsistently. Are you confident that Lopez can stick as a starter right now?
I was not at all. I was like, I am now, but I wasn't. I was like, when they signed him, they were like, oh, he's going to compete for the 5th starter job. I'm like, whatever.
Yeah, I literally had the same exact reaction. I'm like, okay, yeah, let's see it in spring training. But hey, yeah, I mean, it's happened.
It is. He looks good. He's got the 5th spot now locked up, and he looks the part. I am a little bit surprised, if I'm being honest, that he, because he looked really good. I won't lie. He looked good in a reliever role. The interesting thing to watch with him is that the velo's been down, and he builds up throughout his 3-4 innings he's throwing. I think he threw maybe 5 the other day, and it's just weird. Maybe it's just a spring thing. Maybe it's him still working to be a starter. Right now, I like Reynaldo Lopez. I like what the Braves do with arms. So yeah, I'm 100% investing where I can, because I do think the cost is pretty cheap.
Yeah, I think he's just as much of an investment right now as Whitlock. I think long-term, the upside for them, I think, is fairly similar. Like I mentioned, they've both been shown flashes as a starter, as a reliever in the past. And yeah, I think Lopez, he looked really good when we saw him a couple weeks ago. So I'm willing to at least maybe try to buy low on him. Maybe not too low. I think the price tag has gone up a little bit, but still a very reasonable price tag right now, I think. So yeah, definitely worth all investment for him as well. Would you take him or Whitlock long-term?
I still think I prefer Whitlock.
Yeah, me too.
But it's tough. I think Lopez could be a guy. Yeah, he could be a guy that becomes pretty intriguing.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's keep it right there in the National League East. Go down to the Miami Marlins, who have had some injuries already in their rotation. You're already losing Yuri Perez, hopefully not for the season. And Eber Cabrera is to be out for a little bit as well with a shoulder impingement. So who knows how long that will last. And yeah, obviously we don't know with Yuri yet either. Braxton Garrett, shoulder soreness, and obviously they're without Sandy Alcantara for the year. Yeah, that rotation's went from being deep to pretty thin right now. So you're looking like pretty locked into the rotation now with AJ Puck and Ryan Weathers, both of which, I mean, if you asked me a month ago, like right before spring training started, if I was looking to invest in them, maybe I would have said maybe Puck. You know, I had a pretty good year in relief last year, maybe in the saves hold league, I'd have some interest there, but not really with Weathers. I was never really a big Weathers guy coming up through San Diego system. Even when a lot of people had him high in the prospect rankings, I just never was overly intrigued by him. But hey, he has looked really good this spring. 18 innings, 3 ERA on the nose, 1.06 whip, 4 walks to 21 strikeouts. And AJ Puck at 8 1/3, 6 hits allowed, 0 runs, 4 walks, and 15 strikeouts. So hasn't really got quite as much work in as Ryan Weathers so far. I guess you could say probably higher floor with Weathers, higher upside with Puck. What are your thoughts on these two, Chris? Are you looking to invest in either Puck or Weathers? I'm still a little hesitant with Weathers, though he has looked really good, but I think Puck's the more intriguing buy right now.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. Puck has had the talent. He's the 6th overall pick back in 2016. That feels like forever ago at this point. It's wild to say. But I just believe in Puck a little bit more. I'm afraid that Weathers goes back to being the guy that he's always been. But I will say, he has performed well. He has thrown 18 innings. He's actually faced a really high quality of opponent quality at 8.4. 8 is at AAA, 10 is Major League. So his quality of opponent is really good that he's faced so far. He has 21 strikeouts, just to 4 walks. But I do fear that potentially the stuff does fall off. He goes back to walking more batters. And I think Puck just has the more upside long term. It makes me want to invest in him a little bit more. So we'll say I'm a little more confident in AJ Puck over Ryan Weathers, but both have been really interesting and have made me at least turn my head toward him because I'm like, this is fairly interesting.
Yeah, Weathers is someone I'd look at more so in deeper formats. I do think the upside is still fairly limited, more like SP4 type of guy, but it could be a decent one. He has looked a lot better, as I mentioned, this spring. So I'd be willing to shoot a buy low offer over on him. Hopefully he can, you know, carry this over into the regular season, provide some solid value. But yeah, Puck's the one. I've already tried to acquire him in a couple of leagues. I've drafted him a couple of times this year because of the upside. We'll see. I'm still not fully convinced that it'll stick and that it'll work out. But still, he has that good relief value to fall back on, especially in saves holes leagues. But if Weathers doesn't work out, doesn't really have anything to fall back on because he's not going to be a guy, got high leverage guy in the bullpen, doesn't have that type of stuff. But yeah, I'd be worth looking into both right now. But looking back, since you mentioned that 2016 draft class, Chris, the first round is terrible. The later on, so the highest draft pick that has made an all-star team was Will Smith at 32 overall to the Dodgers.
Nice.
And then next one, Brian Reynolds at 59. And then you got Pete and Bo Bichette, 64, 66. Sean Murphy, 83. Hayes, 91. Gallen, Burns, Bieber, 106, 111, 122. So second, third, fourth rounds were pretty solid. But look at the 5 guys that were drafted in front of him. Do you remember who the number one pick was that year, Chris?
2016? Ooh.
Outfielder who has already been traded once.
Outfielder traded once. Oh, is that the Moniak year?
He sure is. Moniak went number one.
Was Ian Anderson third that year?
Yep, he sure was. Nick Senzel right in the middle of those two at number two. Obviously, still has intrigue for some reason for many people. But
is this Riley Pint?
Yep, and Riley Pint was at 4. And we'll see you number 5. Outfielder. I don't think this guy ever actually made it to the major leagues. Let's see.
Was it the Brewers pick?
It sure was.
Okay, it's Corey Ray.
It sure was. Oh, he did get 2 at bats in the major leagues back in 2021. I don't know where he is now. He didn't play last year. He was in Double A and Triple A in 2022. I'm not sure where he ended up going. I don't know. But yeah, that was a pretty rough first round. Who did my Red Sox take that year? Groom. Oh, that's the Groom year. Yep. So yeah, Ian Anderson and Riley Pint. A lot of bad arms. Well, Braxton Garrett was 7. Maybe still some hope for him. Matt Manning was in that draft. Kyle Lewis, some intriguing outfielders in the middle part of that first round. Josh Lowe, Will Benson, Kirilloff, Whitley was in that draft too. Gavin Lux, but yeah, overall, not a very good first round for sure, but good second, third, and fourth rounds, that's for sure. All right, where are we at here? We got four more names here. Gavin Stone, or excuse me, three more names. Gavin Stone, Frankie Montas, Carlos Rodon. Stone looked really good today, 3 1/3 no-hit innings with 8 strikeouts. He's probably one that's going to go for a lot of fab in the first, you know, fab run of the year. But I don't know. He has looked good this spring, Chris, but like we've talked about in the past, he's a change-up first guy. Leery of those guys in general, still hasn't really established a legitimate breaking ball that he can, you know, miss bats with consistently. I might lean towards selling higher now if you can, maybe try to capitalize off this little bit of buzz that he does have. I still think he could be a decent arm. I think he's better than what we've seen, but I don't know. I'm still thinking he's more like a top 75 fantasy guy than someone that's going to be like top 30 or 40. Maybe try to sell high, but what are your thoughts on him?
He's tough. I do still believe in Stone. I think it's just like the tempered expectation thing of who Gavin Stone is.
Yep.
And yeah, I think that he can be a fine arm, as you said. I do think that there is potential, but it just depends on how he continues to develop this arsenal. Because I'll be honest, I don't love the arsenal in general. I think obviously the changeup's really good. Like he's got that going for him. And it's worked in the minors. It has not worked in the majors. So I think that's something to watch pretty closely is, will the arsenal evolve? And if so, what is he working on? Because I do think there's the chance that the fastball could improve a bit. Last year, it set 94. If he sees a tick up, then it's a little more respectable. But the shape is just so-so on it. The cutter, I think, could be a big addition for him. That could really help him out. The changeup's a great pitch. Like, we know that. And then you look at this, like the slider was used like less than 10% of the time. I think that's a decent pitch. And he throws a curveball like not often at all. So I think there are some things that he's going to have to work through. I think the potential is there. But at the end of the day, I'm more with you that I think he's just like a back-end starter than he is a mid-rotation guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much where I am with Gavin Stone. So better than what we've seen, but I still don't think he's going to be a big impact arm, not unless he can develop that breaking ball a little bit. We'll see. And actually, Montas will be someone we'll discuss next episode. So we'll close out the show with Carlos Rodon. The Yankees had, you know, 5 solid innings today on Monday, now up to 4 starts, 15 in the third innings, 2.93 ERA, 0.72 whip. The velocity has ticked up over the last outing or two, still down a little bit, but only like 0.8 on the fastball, I believe it was today. But you know, obviously, we've seen both ends of the spectrum from Rodon, Chris. We've seen him be a Cy Young contender, and we've seen him the injury-riddled, performance-riddled season that we saw from him last year where the ERA was, 6.85 in 14 starts. So, I don't know. Are you buying back into Rodon, or is he just too risky for your liking at this point?
He's a little more risky than I want, so I'm not investing. But I do think the cost has fallen enough where you can take a shot and you'd be okay with it, even if he doesn't work out. So it's a tough spot, but I'm just more in the avoid camp there. I don't want to have to deal with the headache of rostering Carlos Rodon, but I understand the intrigue and why you would go after him.
For me, it's really, you can only say this about every trade, but just about the price tag in general. If he's still like a top 150 price tag, probably not. If it's a post 200 price tag, I can see at that point, I think there's a better chance of positive ROI than negative of that. You know, but obviously there's a lot of risk with him. Stuff is still really good, but I don't know. I think it just all depends on the price in general. I think the price tag is still going to be too high for my liking. So I guess I'm more out than in, but if the price tag does fall, like I said, past 200 or so, I wouldn't be opposed, but lastly, though, Chris, you see the Joe Torre going out to get Rodon today?
No.
That was pretty cool. I don't know like why. I didn't like look into why that happened. But, yeah, Joe Torre went out to make that pitching change when he pulled him after 5 2/3 innings. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm a Red Sox fan, but I always had a lot of respect for Joe Torre. Like, I'm a North Carolina Tar Heels fan, but I've always had a lot of respect for Coach K as well. So, yeah, Joe Torre was a good dude and a good one of the best managers of all time. So that was kind of a fun little thing to see today. But that's going to wrap us up. What a fun risers to talk about in this episode. We'll get to some followers tomorrow. Again, still getting those three episodes in. So we will talk to you again soon. But until then, everyone take care.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.